ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
If wealth inequality gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and the super rich, the very rich, take a bigger and bigger, bigger share of the wealth, the biggest consequence of that is unaffordable housing. Living standards will fall for ordinary Australians.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find us on ABC Listen.
This podcast was produced on the lands of the Awabakal and Gadigal people. I've been thinking about whether there's a hell for podcast listeners. And if there is, I reckon this is probably what they make you listen to.
When you're a banana, one of my favorite examples is the banana that's sitting on the countertop in your kitchen today. Is it alive or dead?
What do you think about human life?
This is part of a two-hour recording of Jeffrey Epstein chatting to noted MAGA influencer and former White House advisor Steve Bannon.
So if you put your banana in a bag and put another fruit in with it, the fruit ripens faster because the banana breathes with it. We don't understand most of those things.
It was early 2019, just months before Epstein's arrest and subsequent suicide. Steve Bannon was apparently trying to find ways to help Epstein rehabilitate his image through the magic of podcasting.
What do you think human life is?
It's a miracle.
Now, nothing newsworthy comes out of this two-hour interview. Bannon doesn't grill Epstein. There are no hard-hitting questions, no admission of guilt or remorse, no insights into Epstein's appalling crimes. They don't even get to the bottom of whether bananas are conscious. There's also no indication that Epstein is particularly gifted when it comes to financial management, which is a bit surprising considering Epstein is generally referred to as
American financier Jeffrey Epstein,
the wealthy financier Jeffrey Epstein,
billionaire financier who rubs shoulders with high society and celebrities,
a billionaire financier. And yet, when you watch this video of him talking to Steve Bannon, he seems more like, well, this is how one of his financial clients, the retail billionaire Les Wexner, described him.
Just a guy, but medium height and with dark hair.
Just a guy with dark hair. Although, he's talking about when he first met Epstein, that hair gave way to grey pretty quickly. I spent 5 hours watching Les Wexner's testimony before the US House Oversight Committee last week, and it was a lot more interesting than Epstein's interview with Steve Bannon. It was interesting because it might provide an answer to the question at the very core of the Epstein scandal.
How did Jeffrey Epstein really make his money?
The survivors have said over and over and over, follow the money. Follow the money.
The origin of Epstein's money. For most of Epstein's early 20s, he was a high school teacher with no background in economics. According to just about every report on him, he never showed any particular financial genius. And this has led to speculation that he got his money from somewhere else.
Jeffrey Epstein was working on behalf of intel services, probably not American.
This is clearly, obviously, sexual blackmail. His island was a honeypot.
Epstein was blackmailing powerful individuals and trying to control them.
I have spent months that I will never get back trying to find the most likely source of Epstein's money. And this deposition of Les Wexner has provided the clearest and simplest answer yet. So, is this the end of the mystery? Can we trust what Les Wexner has told us? I'm Matt Bevan, and this is If You're Listening.
And how did you first come to meet Mr. Epstein?
Was really by accident.
Hang on. Just pause there for 1 second. Before we get to Les Wexner's congressional testimony about Jeffrey Epstein, it's worth talking about where this testimony took place. It wasn't in Washington at the Capitol building, wasn't in New York or Florida or anywhere that Jeffrey Epstein famously lived and operated. It was in New Albany, Ohio.
Welcome to New Albany. a village that is lined with white fences and Georgian architecture, making it a tranquil, peaceful, lovely place to live.
New Albany might look like an old country town, but it very much is not.
New Albany is known for its large homes, wooded areas, curving roadways, and miles of leisure trails. New Albany is a carefully planned community.
Carefully planned and built by Les Wexner.
New Albany was just a farm village, and I bought land here and developed it. Built the schools, built the fire station, built the police station, did all the community public facilities, you know, platted streets.
Wexner is best known as the longtime CEO of the lingerie brand Victoria's Secret. But he was actually the CEO and or founder of 20 retail brands during his career.
You can't imagine how busy I was. I was engaged, I was married, I'm running 20 businesses.
And running all these businesses was extremely lucrative. Wexner was so rich that he even had build my own town money.
Did all the drawings. So I was the master developer of New Albany as a community.
But despite having grand plans for his own town, Wexner's view on the rest of the world was surprisingly contained, at least according to what he says in his testimony.
I never had personal relationships with people that I worked with. I was pretty much a loner.
I never had a birthday party for myself.
I never met Prince Andrew. I never lived in New York, really. I hate New York. I'd never been to his office.
I'd never been to Florida.
In addition to apparently not getting out much, Wexner also seems not to read the news much. For example, during his deposition, he was asked about interactions he may have had with the most famous alleged victim of Jeffrey Epstein's sex trafficking operation.
Are you aware of who Virginia Giuffre is?
Mm-hmm. No. Familiar name, but I've heard it, but I don't connect it to anything.
Did you ever have any sexual contact of any kind with Miss Giuffre?
No. How did I have contact with somebody I don't even know?
Now, I find it pretty remarkable that in 2026, after a 20-year business relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, this guy wouldn't be able to connect the name of Virginia Giuffre to the news. Especially when she'd made allegations against him, too.
Ms. Giuffre has accused you of performing sexual acts with her multiple times. You dispute these allegations?
She must be confused. No, it never happened.
So this is the guy we're dealing with, seemingly hyper-focused on his family, his town, and his businesses, and uninterested in much else, if we take him at his word, of course. I think it's important to first understand this story through Les Wexner's eyes.
How did you first come to meet Mr. Epstein?
It was really by accident. I was friend with a couple, Bob and Wendy Meister, and I was in Florida, and I'd never been to Florida. They were driving me around, showing me what South Florida looked like. Bob stopped the car and he said, there's somebody you should meet, you know, really smart, savvy guy named Jeffrey Epstein. And so they stopped the car. I was sitting in the back seat and they introduced me to Jeffrey and we drove off. That was about it.
So how did Epstein, a guy with no formal education in finance, business or economics, get to the stage where he was being introduced to billionaires like Les Wexner as a smart, savvy guy? Well, Wexner describes him as
the World Olympic all-time con artist.
And if that is true, then it would go part of the way to explaining his career trajectory. So let's go back to the beginning. Jeffrey Epstein started his career as a math teacher at the prestigious Dalton School on Manhattan's Upper East Side, despite having no teaching credentials or university degree. After less than 2 years at the school, he was dismissed for poor performance, but quickly got a job at the Bear Stearns Investment Bank, thanks to a parent of one of his students. He was dismissed from Bear Stearns as well for lending the bank's money to a friend and suspected of insider trading. His talent was in schmoozing, not necessarily in finance. By the late 80s, he had enough high-profile contacts that a few months after their chance meeting in Florida, he was top of the list when Wexner went looking for a money manager.
I asked Bob about, I needed somebody to help me. And I think he said, did you talk to Jeffrey Epstein?
Mr. Wexner, would you characterize your relationship with Mr. Epstein, at least initially, to be solely business related?
Yes.
Did you at any time ever consider him to be a close friend?
No.
Wexner testified that Epstein was only ever a business associate and not a personal friend.
I don't think I ever went to lunch or dinner or a movie or had a cup of coffee with Jeffrey. I didn't see Jeffrey as a friend. My focus was on my business and my focus was on community.
But despite not being friends, Wexner gave Epstein, a guy with pretty untested financial management skills, what many would consider to be an extraordinary amount of control over his personal finances.
Probably all my personal finance, houses, equipment, cars, just inventorying of stuff, all the financial things that someone would handle outside of their business, I'd have someone do because it was so much stuff.
Epstein was given broad power of attorney over Wexner's finances in 1991.
The financial advisor previous to Mr. Epstein, did that individual have power of attorney?
I don't specifically remember it, but I think he did.
And Mr. Epstein did have power of attorney over your financial matters?
Yeah, as did Dennis.
Dennis is Dennis Hirsch, who succeeded Epstein as Wexner's money guy.
And why did this become your practice to give them power of attorney?
So busy, traveling so much. The papers had to be signed, tax returns filed. People had to act on my behalf, so many things to sign. I needed to have somebody to do that.
Now, he sounds kind of flippant, but we're talking about an astronomical amount of money here. In the time Epstein had power of attorney over his money, Wexner's personal fortune hovered between $1 and $4 billion. With power of attorney, Epstein had the ability to sign documents, pay money, and make investments on Wexner's behalf. It's a huge amount of power and responsibility for someone with a very limited resume. Epstein apparently told Wexner he was happy to work for free, no fees, because he was enjoying managing Wexner's money. He claimed that he had lots of other clients.
He would say, like, I'm providing financial advice to the founders of Google. I'm providing financial advice to Jeff Bezos. I'm providing financial advice for the chief technologist at Google. And wow, I'm in good company because these are really smart guys with a lot of money.
Wexner took Epstein at his word.
If my attorney said, he was qualified to argue in front of the Supreme Court, I'd believe him.
This ended up being untrue. In news articles about Epstein through the 90s and 2000s, it was frequently reported that Wexner was Epstein's only known client. But Wexner either didn't read those articles or was uninterested, because he and Epstein's finances became more entwined than any of Epstein's other supposed clients. Take, for instance, the house.
The New York City townhome, 9 East 71st Street.
Townhome is a bit of an understatement. 9 East 71st Street is reportedly the largest private house in Manhattan. If you've ever seen candid news footage of people surreptitiously coming in and out of Jeffrey Epstein's house, it is this house in which Epstein committed many of his most horrific crimes.
I was one of dozens of girls that I personally know who were forced into Jeffrey's mansion on 9 East 71st Street in New York City when we were just kids.
Yeah, that house. Well, before it was Jeffrey Epstein's house, it was Les Wexner's house. Also, you know this plane?
The pilot said that he remembered well transporting Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, Kevin Spacey, and Prince Andrew on Jeffrey Epstein's planes.
Yeah, that was Wexner's plane. And then it was Epstein's plane.
Do you recall how much you sold the plane to Mr. Epstein for?
Approximately $6 million.
How did Mr. Epstein purchase this plane?
I presume we wrote a check.
Presumably a check. Now, if that's the case, there's no public evidence of a check being paid for either the house or the plane. No deeds changed hands, no taxes were paid. During his deposition, Wexner says, as far as he knows, he got a fair price for the house and jet. How does he know that? Well, that's what his wife Abigail told him.
How do you know it was ever paid to you?
Well, I guess Abigail would have known.
Abigail wouldn't
know? Whether it was a check, whether it was a money order, whether it was a bag of money.
The public hasn't been shown evidence of said checks, money orders, or hang on, did he just say a bag of money? Was it Hessian with a dollar sign? Look, clearly he has no idea what is going on with his money. He, by his own admission, wasn't paying much attention.
I was busy. Very busy.
So, Epstein was Wexner's money man from 1991 until he ran into some legal trouble about 16 years later in 2007.
Would you please state your full name?
And Jeffrey Edward Epstein, and my residence address is 6100 Red Hook Boulevard in Virgin Islands.
By 2007, it was clear to Epstein that he was going to be spending some time in prison.
Have you ever been convicted of a crime?
Yes.
What was the crime of which you were convicted?
Two counts, one soliciting prostitution and procuring a minor for prostitution.
At this point, Epstein said that it might be best if Wexner took care of his own finances. Wexner delegated the job to his wife, Abigail.
My wife is a M&A lawyer. She worked for Davis Polk. She's really smart. And she took over the finances, and kind of concomitantly, she was discovering that he had stole money from us.
Epstein stole money from us.
Subsequently, I found out that it was at least $100 million.
Does that represent the grand total of the amount that Mr. Epstein stole from you?
I don't know. I don't think I'll ever know.
So he found out that Epstein was stealing money from him 19 years ago. In those 19 years, Epstein became the most famous sex criminal in history. And yet, despite these horrific revelations, Wexner seems not to have been interested in investigating even the mechanisms by which Epstein stole from him.
The trusts that he was trustee of would receive gifts of limited stock, and he would then sell that stock on the New York Stock Exchange and then use a portion of those proceeds for his own personal purposes. Do you have any knowledge or recollection of what I just described?
I'm effing surprised. I'm shocked. I didn't know this.
Criminologist Tom Volshow suggested that there was evidence Epstein would transfer stock in Wexner's company, Limited Brands, over to his own company account, and then he may have sold that stock and pocketed the profits. According to Wexner, he didn't know this was happening.
Effing shocked. I'm appalled. I never heard that.
There's been a lot of reporting on how much money Epstein allegedly stole from the Wexners. When Abigail Wexner discovered Epstein's thievery, the Wexners began legal proceedings. Those were apparently settled out of court, with Epstein paying the Wexners around $100 million.
I think your counsels also represented that he repaid you about $100 million in 2008. Would you have any knowledge of exactly how much he repaid you or how?
No.
Whether that was via check, money order, or dollar sign sack, we don't know. But when the money was finally transferred, that, according to Wexner, was the end of their relationship.
Never talked to him, never saw him. And as far as I was concerned, once we knew how bad he was dead.
Wexner's lawyers said in 2019 that this misconduct
appears to account for virtually all of Epstein's wealth.
And this is the key point, the point we've been circling this whole time. Was Epstein's extravagant lifestyle, the jet, the mansion, the islands, the ranch, the parties, and of course the vast sex trafficking operation, all financed by picking the pockets of a guy who was too busy building a little model village in Ohio to notice? The most solid piece of data we have on Epstein's money situation is an audit of his finances conducted by the US government when he died in 2019.
Documents show that his estate is valued at $577 million.
Now, that valuation is a little bit off because it includes estimates of the market value of his properties. And it turned out that his properties couldn't really be sold at market value because, well, they were very famously the location of a lot of very heinous crimes. And nobody is going to pay full price for a location now universally known as Pedophile Island. What we can be more sure of are his liquid assets, his actual bags of money, to borrow a Wexnerism. The total value of Epstein's cash, holdings, equities, etc. at his death was $377 million. We also have access to 18 years of Epstein's business records, showing his personal investment holdings in each year from 1999 to 2017. The absolute peak of his wealth was in the last 4 years of his relationship with Les Wexner, where he was sitting on about $500 million. That's right. He never appears to have been a billionaire at all.
I'm effing surprised. Shocked.
Aren't we all, Les? In 2008, Les cut him off and forced him to pay a $100 million settlement. In the next few years, his cash reserves drop precipitously until he's rescued in 2014 by a new client named Leon Black, who paid him $157 million for his services. If we take Les Wexner at his word that Epstein stole most of his money from him in the 90s and 2000s, then there's no real mystery here. This isn't an asset trajectory of a financial genius. It's the trajectory of someone who gained access to large resources, invested them pretty conservatively, and drew down tens of millions of dollars a year to fund his extravagant and criminal lifestyle. Now, to be clear, I'm not saying that I've figured out the entire financial history of Jeffrey Epstein. What I am saying is that when it comes to how Epstein became so wealthy, there doesn't need to be a mystery here. It's very reasonable that he could have lived the life that we can see in the millions of photos and emails and videos that have been released by the US Department of Justice just by stealing money from Les Wexner and investing it in pretty basic index funds. He doesn't need to have been a financial genius or a spy or a blackmailer. He just needed to be
a crook and a con man. And in hindsight, he would make Bernie Madoff look like a Boy Scout. So complete, so diabolical. I mean, just incredible, sinister.
Which we know is true. Now, Les Wexner says that he's a good guy.
And I can't tell you how much I value my own ethics, my own moral compass, that it has a true north.
By his telling, he had no idea about anything the man he entrusted with his multi-billion dollar fortune was doing for the 16 years that they were in business. They weren't friends, he says. Then, when it turned out that man was a sexual predator and a thief, he decided that instead of pressing charges, he'd settle for a refund.
You testified earlier that you did not end up pressing any charges against Mr. Epstein for the theft of your funds. Could you briefly explain to me why, again, you decided not to?
Advice
of advisors. He outsourced that too. He had a town to build after all. In the end, none of the rich and powerful people in Epstein's orbit did anything about his crimes. It took the bravery of people like Virginia Giuffre to actually hold Jeffrey Epstein to account. But unfortunately, Les Wexner can't quite remember who she is. This episode of If You're Listening was written by me, Matt Bevan. Supervising producer is Kara Jensen-McKinnon. It was produced by Adair Shepherd and Pat Sunderland. And in exciting news, Pat and Adair are joining me for a live show at the Newcastle Writers Festival next month. We're not quite sure what's going to happen with live shows for the rest of this year, but we are booked to do this one at least. Pat, Adair and I are going to tell some incredible stories that we can't squeeze into the weekly show, but here's the kicker. None of us know what story the others are going to tell. It's going to be a surprise for all of us, including you, if you come along. It's at the Newcastle City Hall on the 29th of March at 5 p.m. Full details are in the show notes. The event is ticketed to avoid a repeat of last year's guy trying to kick the doors in incident. They are selling fast. The ticketing website, though, isn't great, but if you persevere, I promise you'll get there. I'll catch you next week.